allowed to be anti-racist. Doesn't do anything for society, but it could lift up that university and that campus to understand how to grow better people.
Rasheed,
and that's what I wanted to...
Rasheed Campbell, your response to Tracy Washington.
I would say the first thing is that I have a personal relationship with President Bourne. And when I spoke to him, I think his reactions were spot on. I think the fact that he was passionate and emotional in the ways that he wanted
we
to
have
be 10 symbolically
seconds,
showing. And the ways that he wanted to show how he wanted to create, a statue or a symbolization to say we're not going to stand for something, I think that's great. The thing that I want to say is it's true that these kids need to be educated and we have students that are not from communities that know about racism, but I think it is our duty to say what we're standing for and what we're not going to stand for. I think there needs to be implementation for other students in classes to have them teach race sensitivity and educate them on racist structures and how they cannot perpetuate those things.
We're going to continue this discussion and put part two online. We'd like people to respond. Rasheed Campbell, thanks for joining us. Thanks so much to Tracy Washington. And thanks for Vince Warren for participating earlier. I'm Amy Goodman with Nerman Shake. Thanks for joining us.
It's 5 o'clock. You are listening to KBOO Portland. And the evening news is next.
Qualified candidates to fill two vacant board seats. The KBOO Board of Directors invites qualified KBOO members who are interested in becoming a board member to submit a candidate statement no longer than 500 words, which should include the applicant's experience, information about previous board or coalition experience, and why they want to serve on the KBOO Board of Directors. Please email your candidate statement to Timothy Welp at kboocommunity@gmail.com by March 13, 2015. Candidates should also plan on being present at the March 23rd, 6 p.m. KBOO Board of Directors meeting to present a short statement about why they are interested in joining KBOO Board of Directors. Again, KBOO is looking for qualified candidates to serve on the Board of Directors. Application due March 13th and public presentations will be made March 23rd. More information can be found at kboo.fm/boardvacancies2015.
Tune in Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. to hear Rose City Native Radio with your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Rose City Native Radio is a new public affairs program bringing you local and national Native issues and Native contemporary music. You can find more information about the show online at kboo.fm or find us on Facebook at Rose City Native Radio. Tune in Thursdays from 6 to 7 p.m. to hear Rose City Native Radio with your host, Jackie Malmstrom. Rose City Native Radio is a new public affairs.
And now, your daily volunteer produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Ferguson, Missouri, in the wake of a number of high-profile resignations by city administrators.
Oregon's legislature is hearing the Right to Rest bill, which would establish the right of houseless individuals to sleep outdoors and in cars.
And environmental groups have filed suit against the Port of Seattle to stop it from being used as a storage facility for oil drilling rigs bound for Alaska.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Thursday, March 12, 2015. I'm Jackie Malmstrom.
And I'm Robert Barncord. Two Ferguson police officers were shot yesterday evening after a protest held outside the Ferguson Police Department was dwindling. The demonstration was held following the announcement by Ferguson Police Chief Thomas Jackson that he would resign. He's the latest in a string of Ferguson police officials to announce their resignations. The two officers were providing security for the event when they were shot with a handgun from approximately 125 meters away. The shooter was not apprehended, although several people were taken into custody. Both officers are in the hospital but are expected to fully recover. The Ferguson Police Department has come under heavy criticism after an investigation by the U.S. Department of Justice found that the police department and jail are riddled with widespread racism. The investigation by the Department of Justice was instigated by last summer's shooting of unarmed black teenager Michael Brown by Officer Darren Wilson, who was later exonerated of all charges of misconduct. The shooting of Michael Brown and the trial and exoneration of Officer Wilson sparked widespread and sustained protests throughout Ferguson, which in turn led to further civil rights abuses by the police department. United States Attorney General Eric Holder is considering the possibility of dismantling the Ferguson Police Department based on the Department of Justice's report's conclusions.
A coalition of environmental groups filed a lawsuit against the Port of Seattle Wednesday, challenging the commission's move to enter an agreement with contractors for Shell Oil. KBOO's Robin Ryan spoke with a member of the Pungent Sound Keepers Alliance, one of the suit's petitioners, about what prompted legal action and what concerns they have about the proposed lease.
I'm talking with Amelia Apple, and she is with the Puget Sound Keeper Alliance, and we're going to talk about a lawsuit that you and three other environmental advocacy organizations have filed against the Port of Seattle. Can you talk about what went into the decision to take legal action against the port and the commission members that govern the use of Terminal Number 5?
Our organization's role is enforcing the Clean Water Act in Puget Sound, which means that we are constantly on the water looking for pollution. We monitor compliance with pollution permits, and we have, you know, great concern about anything that's going to bring additional pollution into these waterways, which have suffered quite a bit from industrial activity. In this particular case, our concern came from knowing that Foss, who is the leasee, the port is leasing to Foss, and Foss was then going to host Shell's Arctic drilling ships. And they have not had a great environmental record. The ships get really battered in the Arctic, and they have been fined multiple times for leaking oily water and for various violations. And so we were concerned from that perspective. And then the process of agreeing to the lease between the port and Foss, there was very little public input, and that was also a concern for us.
It seems that there is kind of a standing policy that the terminal in question will not be used for anything other than comparable prior uses.
Actually, one of the things that we're contesting is that having Shell's vessels at that terminal would be in compliance with their shoreline use permit, and that permit designates that terminal as a cargo terminal for loading and unloading of ships. And knowing what kind of maintenance and upkeep is required for Shell's drilling operations, we don't believe that that qualifies as a cargo usage and that it would be more of a home port usage. The mayor has actually asked the City of Seattle Department of Planning and Development to investigate whether their intended use would actually violate that shoreline permit.
What can you tell us about Shell's contracting agents, Foss Maritime and Noble Energy, in terms of their track record on environmental safety?
After Shell's 2012 Arctic offshore drilling program, the Department of Interior conducted a review because they said that that program raised serious questions regarding its ability to operate safely and responsibly. And they found that Shell entered the drilling season not fully prepared in terms of fabricating and testing certain critical systems and establishing the scope of its operational plans. And they also found shortcomings in Shell's management and oversight of key contractors, primarily the people who are operating and servicing and also refurbishing their vessels.
Have you any feel for the terms and conditions set forth in this lease? How much does Shell stand to gain, and at what potential cost to Seattle area residents and the environment? What could they face should something go, let's say, not according to plan?
The lease is bringing quite a bit of money to the port, and in a meeting earlier this week, they did discuss sort of the cost of breaking that lease, which is large. But I think for a lot of people, this goes beyond the impact to Seattle and the waterways around Seattle. And we're very concerned about the impact of Arctic drilling overall. People have said that our refusal to let this lease go through or our ask for them to rescind the lease that it would be only symbolic, that Shell would find a way to drill in the Arctic. But I don't believe that's true. I think that the more times that they face high costs and resistance, there's less of a chance that Arctic drilling operation is going to be beneficial for them. And we've seen the numbers, the amount of greenhouse gases that would be released by extracting the fuel in the Arctic and burning it would be a huge contributor to the ongoing climate change that we know is occurring.
What's next, and where can people who are hearing the conversation that we're having and they want to know more, where can they get information about this agreement between the agents of Shell and Seattle's port?
The best place to get information on the legal action is through Earth Justice, who is representing us. They have a lot of resources on their website. People who are interested in sort of the public dialogue and the public process, I would encourage them to reach out to the port commissioners.
I've been talking with Amelia Atbell. She is the communications coordinator for the Puget Sound Keeper Alliance. If you'd like more information about the legal action taken against the Port of Seattle, visit earthjustice.org. I'm Robin Ryan, and you're listening to KBOO News.
In Salem today, Oregon legislators considered a bill that would regulate the use of aerial herbicides, which are sprayed from airplanes and helicopters here in the state. KBOO's Cenk Soderberg has more on the story.
We are joined on the line by Steve Pettery. He's conservation director with Oregon Wild. Steve, can you tell us what brings you down to Salem this morning? What's the legislation that you're going to be addressing?
The legislation is Senate Bill 613, and it's a measure to try and address the problem of aerial pesticide spraying by the logging industry in Oregon. Over the last couple of years, we've had a number of really high-profile incidents where folks have been living in the Coast Range, people with organic farms who just live near forest land have been sprayed by logging industry helicopters applying pesticides from the air. And what we've discovered is that Oregon has really weak rules when it comes to the application of these pesticides, buffers around homes and schools, or even the public's ability to get information about what pesticides are used.
Oregon has a reputation of being an environmentally friendly state, but you and Oregon Wild have pointed out that our forestry regulations are actually the weakest on the West Coast. How is that? How did that come about?
Well, you know, while Oregon has done a lot of great things on the environment, you know, from the bottle bill to our beach access laws, when it comes to the timber industry, we're still stuck in the 1970s. Here in Salem, a lot of legislators, even legislators who are pretty good on a lot of environmental issues, really avoid taking on the timber industry because of the political clout they wield. And, you know, the timber industry is has automated most of their mills. They export a lot more raw logs to markets overseas than they do finished wood products these days. And, you know, their role as employers has really shrunk, but their influence here politically has not.
So what will the Oregon Forest Practices Act actually do specifically?
Well, this bill, Senate Bill 613, would increase buffers around rivers and streams, sources of clean drinking water, and put in place buffers around homes, schools, and communities so that we hopefully don't see these episodes where people who are out, you know, tending livestock in their backyard get sprayed with these chemicals. It would also create a prior notification system so that if you live near industrial logging lands, the timber company needs to alert people in the community before they take to the air and start spraying the stuff so that folks can take precautions to protect their health, the health of their animals. And then it also creates an online record system where you can go back and look at what was applied in your watershed. And that's a really, really important change from where we are now. What we've seen with some of these folks down in Gold Beach and elsewhere is even after they were sprayed with these chemicals, when their doctors tried to find out what they'd been exposed to, there's no rule requiring the timber companies to tell them.
Wow. So those residents who were sprayed from the air really have no recourse at this point.
You know, exactly. And it seems crazy that in Oregon in 2015, we